Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunatu, Sahaveyan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastoma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 2 Bhagavan's limited medium size form is omnipotent and all pervasive. Anuchedas 30 through 45. Adhikarna Prakashika. After affirmation of the transcendental nature of the Lord's incarnations in the material world in the previous Adhikarna, which concluded by presenting that Bhagavan's human-like form has inconceivable powers and is the abode of contrary Shaktis. The current Adhikarna focuses on elaborating the supernatural power of Bhagavan's personal form, Sri Krishna, who is the source and shelter of all other expanses and incarnations. The limited, medium-sized form of Bhagavan, known as Madhya Makara, is the source of all the other forms. This is proven beyond doubt in this Adhikarna by the author, Srila Jiva Goswami, by citing the prayers offered by Lord Brahma to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, after he was bewildered by the Lord's personal potencies. Even Lord Brahma, the secondary creator of the material universe, mistook Krishna's form as ordinary and his pastimes in Vrindavan as the play of mere human child. Right, so Brahma is even becoming bewildered by the medium form, right? Because it's very obvious when he takes his form as Vaikunthapati that he's God. Right, but when he takes this medium-sized form, which we, you know, people would just consider as a human form, like that, and so that's the unless Krishna reveals that is he is the Supreme Absolute, you won't know. Yeah.
And that only happens by bhakti.
So you see, as the bhakti increases the intensity, then you get to know more and more of the Lord.
And with the gopis, he can't even maintain the form.
No, because their love for him in that medium-sized form then is perfect there. Yeah. But after being shown the full transcendental potencies of Krishna, Lord Brahma realizes his own foolishness, and with great humility offers prayers to free himself from the offense committed at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. First, Lord Brahma states that Krishna is the creator of Mahatattva. Krishna is Mahavishnu. Whereas he, Brahma, is an insignificant soul bound by the material modes, right? So Krishna's just automatically outside. He's working with the ingredients that Krishna's already given. So as Mahavishnu, he's creating all the universes and all the ingredients. He's providing the ingredients. Brahma just manifests it. You know, it'd just be like, let us say, someone then has a plan for a building, and they have all the money and all the ingredients for it because they provide it. Then they have an engineer, like, who then, you know, supervises the building of it. But he doesn't bring one brick, you know, give one rupee towards the construction. Right? So everything that's there in the construction is provided by the owner. Right? And then he simply does his particular work. Does that make sense? So he manifests. So all the ingredients are already there from the primary creation. The blueprint is there. It's in the lotus. Right, the universal form is there. Now, Brahma then He simply arranges its manifestation. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and that's in one universe, and Mahavishnu is creating unlimited universes. So he's kind of bringing into perspective, because before this he didn't have the proper perspective. Right? Also, Brahma says that the Lord should not take his offense seriously because he, Krishna, is the Father, as he is the Hiranyagarbha form, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, the shelter of all the jivas in the universe. Hence, Lord Brahma explains how Lord Krishna is himself the Purusha avatars. Then, in the next verse, Lord Brahma proclaims that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan.
Sometimes Garbhodaksha Vishnu is called as Hiranyagarbha, and sometimes even Brahmaji is called as Hiranyagarbha. So, just because father and son relationship, something like that.
Hiranyagarbha means is the creative impetus, right? So then, in Mahavishnu, then the right side then has the aspect of he's a creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So the right side has that aspect of Sadashiva, the left side of Hiranyagarbha, and then he is the aspect of Vishnu. So Hiranyagarbha is a principle, and so depending upon how you're doing it, then it's dealt with. Right, so Brahma in the capacity of manifesting the universe, that in that way he's Hiranyagarbha. But actually, it's what is he manifesting is what Garbhodaksha Vishnu has already given. So Hiranyagarbha is actually Garbhodaksha Vishnu. But that principle is just the manifestation or the expansion of Mahavishnu, who has that Garbhodaksha. When all the universes come and all that, the universes themselves, the golden, they're called Hiranyagarbha. Right? So the creative aspects, that's Hiranyagarbha, yes.
Also we can say that for each universe, the Hiranyagarbha form is specific, that is Garbhodaksha Vishnu.
Yes. Like that. So in the Veda, the Hiranyagarbha Shukta is about Garbhodaksha Vishnu.
The right side is Sadashiva Shivaspati.
Yes.
And the left side?
Hiranyagarbha. We're talking about her in the garden. Also, Brahma says that the Lord should not take his offense seriously because he, Krishna, is his father, as he is the Hiranyagarbha form, Garbhodaksha Vishnu, the shelter of all the jivas in the universe. Hence, Lord Brahma explains how Lord Krishna is himself the Purusha avatars. Then, in the next verse, Brahma proclaims that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Narayana is his expansion. In order to substantiate his statement, Lord Brahma first describes the form of Lord Krishna, which is envisioned by Mother Jashoda in his mouth. Jashoda Mayi sees the entire cosmos, including the Vaikuntha and Goloka Vrindavan, inside the tiny belly of her son, Krishna. This proves that Krishna exists both inside and outside the creation, and hence, he is the all-pervading Supreme Absolute. So he's inside the creation, means he's what pervades everything, but he's still outside because we see the whole creation is within him. Like that, yeah. And hence, he is the all-pervading Supreme Absolute. Because unless you're inside and outside, how do you pervade everything? When Brahma cites his own experience of observing all the four-handed forms of Narayana merging back into Krishna, though this Lord Brahma concludes that Krishna is the Swayam Bhagavan, whereas Lord Narayana is his expansion. Well, through this, yes. Then Brahma explains that all the guna avatars and all other incarnations are also expansions of Lord Krishna and are not independent of him. Lord Brahma then conveys the reason for the manifestation of unlimited incarnations of the Lord. He says that the Lord, being pleased by the worship of his devotees, manifests a suitable form according to their desires through his yoga maya shakti. Hence, like we saw, Lord Chaitanya, when he's with the devotees, all the different devotees are there, so to each devotee, he manifested that particular form that is their worshipable deity. Right? So, because in Chaitanya Lila, you see all the different realms are represented there. But for the particular incarnations, he's manifesting that according to the particular nature of the devotee. hence the Supreme Lord in his own medium size form, as Krishna possesses inconceivable shaktis and is eternally engaged in reciprocating with the desires of his devotees by manifesting various forms to perform pastimes to attract their hearts. Having established that Bhagavan in his limited medium size form is omnipotent, Jiva Goswami then delineates the all-pervading power of the Supreme Lord. So I always say limited means it's within a context that we can relate. Because it can be any size he wants. Right? So it's then limited to that human-sized form. But that's the original form. The unlimited then comes from there. Because he himself, that form is already unlimited. Jiva Goswami then delineates the all-pervading power of the Supreme Lord as envisioned by great devotees like Narad Muni and Bhishma Dev. Narad Muni personally experiences the supernatural power of Lord Krishna in Dwarka. In each and every palace Narad Muni visits, he sees that the Lord is engaged in various activities to please his family members. All the forms envisioned by Narad Muni are exactly the same, and yet separate and complete. So the same form of Krishna, but you see, is each one is complete in itself, and he's performing different pastimes in each palace. So each one he goes to, he's doing something different. Right? Hence, the Supreme Lord Krishna was visible with one body of a human in each of the palaces separately and completely by the power of his Yogamaya Shakti. This is also confirmed by Bhishma Dev when he lay in the bed. I would think it would be more on. The arrows may be in.
Yeah.
But on the battlefield. On the bed of arrows, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He says, freed of the illusion of difference in the Lord's various forms, I have attained the Lord who is one, though appearing to be many, like the sun seen by many people. Right? Because each person sees the sun, and to them it's the sun that they're seeing. But it's just one sun, even though everybody, wherever they're situated, is seeing the sun seemingly differently situated. But it's still one sun. Right? Who is the charioteer, but who also is in my heart, the unborn and situated in the hearts of all the jivas, who create their own bodies. Right, so the jivas create their own bodies by their karma. Right? They don't actually put them together. You know, you're sitting there in your workshop and that, oh, what's that? Oh, that's making the body for next life. You know, no. You know, somebody was lazy, didn't bother, they were just watching TV all day, so then next time they don't have a body, you know, so he ends up being just the remote, you know, that's all that was practically there, you know, because that'll last a little longer than the half-eaten sandwich that's sitting on the coffee table, so he decided to go with the remote, yeah. So they create their own bodies by their karma, then they end up in a particular body, right? The material nature arranges it, but it's there because of the jiva. You know, it's just like the restaurant can prepare any of the preparations on the menu, but according to a customer, when they order something, then that's what's made. So you can say, therefore, the customer creates his own meal. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Thus, this Adhikarana thoroughly established the supreme omnipotency and opulences of Bhagavan's limited medium-sized form, or the Sri Vigraha Deity form of the Lord. Anucheda 30. Another section now starts to show that the limited form of the Lord is endowed with all power, according to the realization of Brahma. What am I, a small creature measuring 7 spans of my own hand, enclosed in a pot-like universe, composed of material nature, the total material energy, false ego, ether, air, fire, water, and earth? And what is your glory when unlimited universes pass through the pores of your body, just as particles of dust pass through the openings of a screened window, when you create and destroy? It means, how much effort is there in the screened window that the dust is passing through? Right? No effort. So the whole point is Krishna's creating the whole universes, all the unlimited universes, you know, just as easily as dust passes through the screened window. It's that simple, right? He doesn't have to sit there and meditate. He doesn't have to, grunt and groan or, make funny noises to, So many sons, yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.11. Udvriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Here, Brahma quotes, equates Mahavishnu, creator of Mahatattva, with Krishna, and shows that in comparison to Krishna, he, Brahma, is like a small bird in comparison to Garuda. The meaning is clear. Vriti, after humbling himself before the Supreme Lord, Lord Brahma next prays to the Lord to forgive his offense because he, Brahma, is the son of the Lord. Anucheda 31. O controller of the senses, does a mother take offense when the child within her womb kicks with his legs? And is there anything in existence, whether designated by various philosophers as real or as unreal, that is actually outside your form, known as Hiranyagarbha Antaryami? Right, so is it outside your form? Nothing's outside your form, because he's known as Hiranyagarbha Antaryami. Means he's in everything, but everything's within him. So you always have these fun, you know, seeming contradictions. Like a mother, you should forgive my offense, since I am also within your womb, like all other beings. Right. So everything is within the Lord. So that means then he's within the Lord, so therefore just as the mother forgives. That's why he's using this example. Anucheda 32. Particularly, I have been born from you. My dear Lord, it is said that Brahma came out of the lotus in the navel on Narayana's belly in the water of devastation of the universe. Certainly these words are not false. Thus am I not born up from you. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.13. Did I not come from you? The meaning is, yes, certainly I've come from you alone. Vriti. In the next Anucheda, the superiority of Lord Krishna's personal form, Swayam Rupa, over his other forms, such as Lord Narayana, is established by citing Lord Brahma's prayers, where he addresses Lord Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, and Mahavishnu as his expansion. Anucheda 33. The Lord says, if I were Narayana, who lies on the ocean of devastation, then you would have arisen from me, but that is not so. In answer to this objection, Brahma says, Narayanas tvam nahi sarvadehinam atmas yadhi shakila loka shakshi narayanon gam nara bhu jala yanat tachchapi satyam na tavaiva maya. O Lord, of whom Mahavishnu is your expansion, Narayana, Mahavishnu, the source of the other Purushas, is not you. Nor is the third Purusha dwelling within all beings. Nor is the second Purusha the witness of all planets. Mahavishnu called Narayana because he is the shelter of the Karna ocean, which gives rise to material creation, is simply your expansion. It is not true that you are Narayan. That knowledge is caused by your Maya. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.14. Udvriti, Srila Prabhupada. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, Chapter 2, Text 30, Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. This statement was spoken by Lord Brahma in his prayers to Lord Krishna after the Lord defeated him by displaying his mystic powers. Brahma had tried to test Lord Krishna to see if he was really the Supreme Personality of Godhead, playing as a cowherd boy. Brahma stole all the other boys and their cows from the pasturing grounds. But when he returned to the pastures, he saw that all the boys and cows were still there. Lord Krishna had created them all again. When Brahma saw this mystic power of Lord Krishna, he admitted defeat and offered prayers to the Lord, addressing him as the proprietor and seer of everything. Everything in the creation, and as the Supersoul who is within each and every living entity, and is dear to all. Lord Krishna is Narayana, the father of Brahma, because Lord Krishna's plenary expansion, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, after placing himself on the Garbha ocean, created Brahma from his own body. Mahavishnu in the causal ocean and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, the Supersoul, in everyone's heart, are also transcendental expansions of the Supreme Truth. O original Lord, Adisha, superior to Narayan, who is the Antaryami of all beings. This means, O Bhagavan, for certain he, you are not Narayana. Narayana is your Amsha, Angam. Though that is so, I have ultimately arisen from you, the Angi, since I have arisen from the Anga. Lord Krishna asked, why is he called Narayana? Why am I different from him? Brahma replies, Narayana is the Antaryami, Atma of all beings, Dehinam. He is the shelter, Ayana, of all jivas, called Nara. Right, so he's the, so therefore Narayana means he's the shelter of all living entities. Thus he is called Narayana. But you are indifferent to his position as Antaryami. You are Bhagavan. Moreover, he directly witnesses all people, Akila, Loka, Sakshi. Thus he knows Ayate, all jivas, Nara. In this way, he is Narayana. However, you are the witness through your Amsa, Narayana, and not directly. Thus you are different from him. So, Krishna, then, he is the original, right? We're getting at this point that Krishna's medium-sized form, and that is his original form, his form in Braja. So then he expands as Balaram. Then Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Servant or Godhead. Then from him, all the other expansions are coming. Right? And so you're going to have that aspect of being the Supreme Lord, and you're going to have that mood as the shelter of all the living entities. Right? So then that's going to be specifically there in Narayana, right? Then Balaram's expansion. Because Narayana means you're giving shelter to all the living entities, because then from there you're going to expand Vaikuntha. Right? So then you're going to get all aspects of Goloka, and Ayodhya, Vaikuntha, everything else like that, that will all come from there. So he's the shelter of all living entities. And you have that aspect is that this is all happening with the when you bring in majesty, you bring in more focus on the quality of the ingredients. Right? The action performed and the quality of the ingredient. Mm-hmm. So that means you're putting more emphasis on the secondary aspect than would be in Braj. It doesn't mean it eclipses the primary being the service to the Lord is always there, but we see we increase the aspect of in increasing majesty, we're increasing the emphasis of the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis. Right? So the quality of them is important in worshiping God. Right? Because he's God, so therefore that's the aspect. Does that make sense? So it has a certain level of intimacy and a certain level of affection that's there. So on the platform of prema, they're functioning, but not at the level as in Braj. Because in Braj, then it just reduces that where he becomes so prominent, that faith in Krishna as a person is so prominent that the aspects of, the aspects of service to him, you know, in this majesty is not important. It becomes more intimate because the faith is greater. You know, just like it said, the maturity of faith is the highest at prema. Right? So that's what's bringing there is that faith in Krishna. But then when you get to prema, so the basis is going to be shanta. Then when you increase that again and create that more closeness and that attitude of service, actual dynamic service, then you get servitorship. More again than you get friendship, because they're now God's equal. Then you get to parental, where actually God's junior. Right? So what's happening is that faith is getting more and more. Does that make sense? Yes.
Material realm is not when the secondary takes prominence over the primary.
That means that material realm means there's the secondary, there is no primary. No primary in the way of Krishna.
But you have religious people in the material realm.
But it's in the context of Vlad was very religious, but when he went off on a campaign and came back after 3 years, and his wife had died of some, strange diseases that seemed to go around at those times, you know, like that. Then he gave up religion. So you see, is that the moralists then God is only part of their morality.
Right.
Like if we say, so let's say there's a modern issue, just like let's say this. Let's say we take the vegan aspect. Okay, so that's a moral principle,
yes,
right? You're taking some ethical kind of thing of things you don't do, things you do,
yes,
and then you're regulating your life according to that. God has to fit into that,
yes,
because if God's vegetarian and not vegan, then the problem comes down to is that they're going to project that the vegan is the morality is more important than Krishna. So therefore, Krishna wouldn't want to take anything that's not vegan, because the quality of the milk won't be up to their vegan standard. So therefore, Krishna wouldn't want to take it. It's his creation, and he's doing that, and the service that they're rendering, you know, if you look at it, it's abused devotion,
mm-hmm,
because it's mixed. It's about them. So how is this? It's not pure devotion. And where's that coming from? From their own mentality and all that. But Krishna's willing to accept that. But he's not willing to accept the areas where my morality extends, and he has to fit into that. You know, just like someone was telling me the other day, they had the kheer from the temple, no sugar in it. Right? Because people grumble, oh, sugar will kill you, this, that. So they reduce it down. But the point is, Prabhupada said, Krishna likes sugar. You don't like sugar? Don't eat it. But their thing is, no, I want to eat the Mahaprasad, but Krishna can't have sugar.
Yeah.
So you understand what I'm saying? So it's not about God first.
No.
The primary is added in. That's why they're considered better and more pious, because they've added God to their concept of morality. And so they say it comes from him, but they're going to do it according to how they think is the right way to do it anyway. Because if religion is coming from God, then that means all the different religions are coming from God, therefore they're all following the morality according to God, but then each one will kill each other because no, only their one is, because I'm this, therefore it's better. If they were born in the other religion, they'd say that's better. You understand? So, you know, how you say, you know, how you, just as the thing goes, that's why he said, God bless America, you know, but, you know, they're not blessing anywhere else, but it's all God's creation,
yeah,
you know. But.
Yeah. Their deity was like never even in America. So.
Sorry?
Their deity, the one they worship, was never even in America. So. Well, it depends who you ask.
Figure that one
out. I think the Mormons had him in New York in 1930
really?
Something. Yeah.
All right, Krishna.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Book of Mormons. Pretty far out reading.
Yeah. Okay. New York, right?
Yeah.
Not LA, New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to know the parampara. Yeah. So like that. But it's, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's how you tell is that, okay, if I'm just chanting Hare Krishna, it's about Krishna and all this and that, but when it comes down to issues,
yeah,
you know, like issues about women, about the children, about, you know, occupations, about varnashram, about restrictions, then they're going to regulate those things according to their moralistic values. That's how you understand Krishna's added to their morality. Not their morality is about Krishna. So that's the difference between mixed devotional service and pure. But because there's a connection to Krishna, and there's a worry about an anxiety, you know, in connection with Krishna, therefore there's advancement.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's too much mixing, then it can go, especially if they go against things that Krishna likes.
Is that where it becomes bhakti misra karma rather than...
Yes, it'll switch from karma misra bhakti to bhakti misra karma.
Yeah.
Like that. And so that's the thing. It can switch. It can oscillate. So... For, you know, for most devotees, you'll see is majority is about devotional service and in pursuance of pure devotional service. But by their conditioning, there may be some areas where it kind of like the conditioning takes prominence. You know, and that's just where their impurities are. So by continuing the process, that'll get less and less until it turns into pure devotion. But... still, if one's aware of it, one can keep it from being a disturbance, you know, more. And especially that it disturbs others. Because it's about me and I'm special, therefore everybody should be following it. That's when it gets a problem.
Yeah.
If that's the way they do it and they keep their mouth shut, you don't mind. But when they start professing it to everybody else, that then that's why I mentioned the first example. Because they're famous for, even amongst the Karmis, for professing it amongst everybody. Yes?
Then you have a seminar of Mishra Bhakti preaching, and you really feel it's unpalatable to listen, or something is wrong here.
Yes.
Even yourself is not, you are not so pure, but you understand that this is not something coming up.
Yes.
So what to do with this? You don't go to these seminars.
The best is just not to go. And if not, then you spend a lot of time outside, answering important phone calls or going to the bathroom or, stuff like that. Or, the alarm didn't go off in the morning, so you were late, So come late, leave early, and step out many times. Yes?
But leave your luggage in. Leave your luggage in.
Yeah, leave your luggage there, leave your bag. You have your bag there, leave it on the table, your computer's there, make sure it's locked. And then stuff like that.
Don't trust the vegans.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Or make lots of comments where you just annoy everybody.
That's my favorite.
Like that. Just bring up, saying, well, what about this? Prabhupada says, and then they have to constantly, find something. So you're not agreeing with Prabhupada then?
Yes.
You know, like that. Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out how you connect this and this.
Yeah, it's like the isn't the highest based on, representing Prabhupada's instructions? We're going again. I don't quite. Can you explain this, please? Yeah, you can do that also if you.
They'll leave you alone real quick.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Yes. They won't put you on any other committees, don't worry.
Yes. The question is about compliance. It's principle and the point of Ahimsa Niyam.
Okay.
We have a prescription to be seated. I think after 1 year, they recommend to all communities to have their own file and to offer to do the Sunday Ahimsa Niyam. If the community is very little and they don't have opportunity to
See, as the whole point is that we're looking at what's the whole anxiety about the cows? Why today? That's the point. It's a fashion. If the Karmis weren't vegan, there would be no devotee vegans. Absolutely not. Unless, the doctor told them or something, they're lactose intolerant and that. So you have some devotees like that. But they would much rather eat, but they can't. And they always, sneak in a few things here and there, and then they get gas, and so then they don't do it again, and after a couple of months, then again. They get gas. You know what I'm saying? So why now? Because the Karmis are into it. When the Karmis stop being into it, it'll just disappear. Does that make sense? So that's the one point that is the interesting point. Because they're not taking any less care of the cows now as they did in the 60s and 70s when Prabhupada was here. There's no difference. The cows are cows. Dairy farmers are dairy farmers. They've had the mechanical milking since then and, all these days. It's all been going on since then. So why now? Because the Karmis are into it, and they're embarrassed to explain what vegetarian is over vegans. Because vegans are so in your face, and they don't have the confidence. Like one devotee was telling me just recently that he was saying that the first time he met devotees, he didn't join. And the reason he didn't join is he was looking for something. He heard about the restaurant, the Govinda's restaurant. He went in there, he saw the pictures, the menu, everything. He was like into it, like that. But he didn't know what they were. So he went up to the devotee at the counter and asked, what are you guys and all that? And they were very embarrassed. Well, we're Hare Krishnas. And they thought, why should I be part of this if they're all embarrassed? So it was then later when he bumped into the books and he saw, how it was explained and that there's not an embarrassment there. Then he got interested and became a devotee. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is that you know, they're in your face, you be in your face back, or just don't care. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's not explained. So if we're talking about spiritual, are we talking about just how they're dealing with the cow? Or is there also spiritual consideration? Because if it's about the cow represents the earth, right? And, you know, for a bona fide vegan to maintain his veganness, how many pictures you have to take of your vegan burger and send it around and all that? And what is that taken on? On a camera? How do you manage all that? On your computer? Where did all that come from? Right? One computer equals 1 ton of raw material dug out of the earth. So is that abuse or not? So why only the cow form? Why not the earth form? What about the air? All vegans live in the city. All. You know, maybe 0.01, you know, percent or something. Don't. They're in Goa. Or they're visiting their grandmother out in the country. They're all there, and so they're breathing. Why don't they give up breathing abused air? They can say no, but you have to breathe air. But that's the point. Humans have to drink milk. It's part of the need. If you're trying for self-realization, then you must have milk because it develops the finer brain tissues. Otherwise, people can't get into the philosophy, Varnashram. They can't bend their head around it. Why not? If you don't drink milk, you won't understand it.
I usually use that one. Like that, like say, well, you won't develop the fine brain tissue, and they'll be like, that doesn't make any sense. You see?
It says exactly. There, see? Oh no, it's already having its effect. Everybody stand back. Maybe it's contagious. So you have to have milk to develop. Also, Prabhupada mentions, I've come across in two different places where he's talking about the reason that people's lives are short in this age. One is because they're unregulated. Two is because they don't take dairy. It's like kids. They, you know, the morning, it's milk and everything. The adults, what are they thinking? They're drinking their coffee black. You know, that when do they take milk? You know? Dairy will make them fat. This will make them fat. Everything will make them fat. Huh? Yeah, that's the whole point. They're already fat. So.
That's because of the sugar.
Because of the sugar. And that's why we get rid of sugar.
Yes.
And then because of the salt, then that we get rid of that.
Yes.
So if it has no taste, then it's bona fide.
Rice cakes.
Huh?
Rice cakes.
Even that, you're stretching it. What about the carbohydrates there?
Ice cubes.
What's the quality of the water?
Yes, but what's the quality of the water? Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Also, one of my aunts, she said that she used to have a lot of mental problems, like tension and other things. After drinking milk, after she regularly took milk, it all went away.
Yes.
Now it is more concentration is on the physical, a little bit carbohydrate here. But the mental problems are the worst.
Yeah.
And they're developing more and more because of
no one's taking milk properly. So that's the thing, is humans need to take milk. It's part of the thing. Because we have to remember, see, according to the vegans, right, is that animals aren't supposed to be domesticated, right? So according to them, cows are just naturally out in the wild, and somehow or another, sometime way back then, somebody, somehow or another figured out that they give milk and herded them in and figured out they ate grass and all that, and then, you know, started this whole thing. When? Who knows? They can't really say. They always say 10,000 years ago because it's before they can define what it is, so it sounds good. Right? So, but the point is cows were created as part of human society. So they've always been domesticated because in Manu Samhita, it mentions then when the cows are created, Krishna created Vaishyas to protect them. So they're made simultaneously. So the Vaishyas and the cows go together. Just like the population, the kings go together, the Vedas and the Brahmins go together. So this idea is that that's how Krishna made it. So it has to be like that. So just that you boycott it, but the point is the cows don't go back to a natural habitat and all that. You know what I'm saying? So it's artificial. And those who support these kind of things, like Peta and those things like that, they're right. People shouldn't have pets. You know, you don't use wool, you don't use silk, you don't use honey. You have nothing to do with them. So if there is any animals in that in human society, Peta, if they get a hold of them, they what do you call them? Euthanize? Means they
yes,
kill them.
They kill them.
90% of all animals that go to a Peta shelter are killed. Because their thing is, we have nothing to do with animals. So it's like the standard anarchist kind of thing is that we'll destroy everything to make it peaceful. But they're the ones that are going to arrange it, and they're the ones that are saying how it should be done.
But they haven't taken it far enough, because really it's save the planet, kill yourself.
Ooh, okay.
I'm just following their own philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to have a zero carbon footprint? That's one way to do it.
Yeah, but think of all that, the methane and all that, then when they're, you know, they're digesting in the earth and all that.
Good point. So we ship them off to Antarctica and let them freeze.
Yes. And then that says, and then because then you won't have a problem, because then there'll be no global warming, because that's coming from the humans, so then they'll stay frozen forever.
We solved it.
Yes.
No more environmental issues.
Yes. Yes. Here, 1 second. We're still harassing over here.
Oh, okay.
I guess they get back. Does that make sense? So it's necessary in human society. So, okay, the karmis may not understand that, and that we don't mind. But devotees don't understand this?
They don't drink milk, they don't have finer
brain. Yeah, because they don't drink the milk, they don't have the finer brain tissues. Right? Because before, no one had the problem. Prabhupada drank the milk. The cows weren't any different. Because the point is, it's necessary. They're taking it, it's not necessary in the diet, because the karmis say it's not necessary. And since when do we care what the karmis say? You know, since when do they actually understand nutrition? If they understood nutrition, they would say everybody should stop eating meat. Right? But they don't. So, you know, how much do they really know? Right? They don't say. I mean, in the 30s, I remember one devotee was at one on, I can't remember what country it was. It may have been Germany. He was at the eye doctor. This would have been like back in the 70s or something. And you know how you have the letters, you know, one big letter and then it goes down and like this, and then you read and you try to figure out what it is, you know? So the doctor was there and he stepped out for a minute for something. He's sitting there looking at it, and he looks at it and it catches it, it's words. Because what it said was, too much sex ruins your eyes. So officially it was understood like this before, but because it's just so undigestible by people, they just drop it. There were tests in that done in the 20s and 30s on this, and they understood there was a direct connection. But because it's something no one's going to go for, you know, just like getting rid of cigarettes, how long did that take? Right? So like this, it's just people aren't going to buy it. So it's not that they're working on the principle of what's actually the perfect thing. It's just one thing that is a fad that you can do. You know what I'm saying? So we have a problem there, is that from the basis of it, it doesn't have a strong basis. Yes, cows shouldn't be bothered. That's a fact. But you have to take care of them. By just boycotting milk, that's akarma. You do nothing. You know, it's just like someone's there in the street, he's being beaten by someone else. I don't support, you know, beating and all that, so I'm not going to get involved. Because if I get involved with the person, I'm getting involved with an abused person, and I don't support abuse. This is about the strength of their argument. Does that make sense? So they're doing nothing. That's why I say it. They're city people. No one on a farm, you know, even if they're, you know, they'll be a vegetarian, they'll never be a vegan. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes down is that it's not about the cows. It's about an issue. You know what I'm saying? It has to be some issue. It's just like either the vegan's big now, you know, because people have, you know, gotten bored with the, you know, the women thing, because they got bored with the kids thing. And somehow or another, making a big issue about the old people dying, somehow or another, that didn't take off, because only the old people care and the kids don't. You know, so even though they tried it, you know, like 2 years ago, they put up these things and like that, trying to, you know, scare you into this. It didn't go. But guaranteed, they will never make a thing about protecting Brahmins. Never.
When there are more Brahmins, they will come.
But then it'll just naturally be there. It won't be an issue. But I'm just saying, when you're working in these political issues, then... You know what I'm saying? So, and the point that they're approaching it from is not coming from Shastra. They'll use Shastra to support as much as it does, but where Shastra doesn't support, they'll reject it. So it's not based on Dharma. It's not Manomoy, it's Pranamoy. So it's political. Does that make sense?
When yeah. When we got this statement, we were very confused because we thought, how to feed our deities to Krishna, Krishna?
The whole point is they're Krishna's cows. Right, so that's the point we're getting to here, is that being Krishna's cows, why wouldn't Krishna accept service from his cows? What have the cows done wrong? The dairy farmer's wrong. So does that mean he won't accept the service of the cows? And then the Brahmins offer that to the, that's what they can do. Politicians, they should deal with this stuff. Brahmins are supposed to educate, but what they're doing now, this is political, not educational. Right, and by offering that milk to Krishna, the cow gets the same spiritual benefit as the devotee who's offering it. So they sit with devotion, they offer that same, the cow gets the same benefit. Now some will say, well, how do you tell which cow it is because all the milk is mixed? So all those cows get, you know, use your brain, you know. Does that make sense? So... That's the whole thing, is that we're still benefiting the cows. Devotional service is the actual benefit. Political statements aren't going to benefit anybody. Right? If they did, Robespierre would have done better. You know? But Robespierre, you know, halfway through the revolution is dead. Killed by his own people. His politics, that's what it says, don't never trust a politician. You know what I'm saying? Because they can't maintain that position. It's just whichever way the wind's blowing. Does that make sense? So there's a problem there. So the cow's doing what it's supposed to do. The devotee's doing what it's supposed to do. And we're supposed to throw that all out because the dairy farmer's not doing what they're supposed to do. That's two-thirds. Right? Not even a simple majority. Right? So... Then now, so the actual point is to work on the dairy farmers. That's the real solution. Not drinking milk, all you do is put dairy farmers out of business. The meat industry, that'll be there as long as people are eating meat. So it reduces that. In other words, veganism will reduce the meat industry, but it will destroy the dairy industry. So at the end of the day, there won't be a dairy industry. So they haven't really benefited cows, because their idea is just get rid of cows. They don't care if all the cows disappear. They have a philosophy. We don't deal with them, so I'm cool. They don't care about cows. Devotees are supposed to. But what are they doing for the cows? They can say, I'm not drinking the milk. How does that in any way, shape, or form benefit the cow? How? Either the dairy farmer is going to continue his method. If that doesn't work because no one's buying the milk, he sells the cows. And who does he sell them to? Right? Another dairy farmer? No. So then how is that boycott benefiting the cow on any level? So you have to use your brain. It's not doing anything. It's not like, okay, stop using, Nile alligator, you know, skin shoes. Okay, then people leave the Nile alligators alone. But the cows, they're domestic. They're part of human society. What are they doing? Right? Does that make sense? So that means then, yes, you have to have a farm, but then what does that mean? Is the society pumping money into that? No, they're just telling the community that this is what they have to do. So where's the responsibility? Unless there's responsibility, what's the point of authority? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, if you're going to deal with that, is that if you can't run your own farm, dairy farmers know how to run dairy farms. So are they going and finding dairy farmers that are, you know, how you say, what would you say, what's the word that they're supportive of? Kind of, they have, you know, in other words, they like what we're saying, they're willing to do that, right? But what does that mean? Why would they be dealing with the cows in this particular way? Because they're just demons and hate cows? No, they live with cows. They take care of the cows. It's because no one wants to pay any money for anything, right? If means why are there imitation diamonds? Because people don't want to pay for a real one, right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is that people want cheap stuff. So are the devotees willing to pay double the price or triple the price for milk that is ahimsa? That's what it's saying. They just say you have to have ahimsa. Point out what it means. Educate them what it means. If the dairy farmer will get more money, he'll make nicer arrangements. He has to be competitive in the market, so he has to make it as cheap as possible. So who loses? The cows. So are we going to put in the money? Are we going to be regular? Right? So the whole thing is nice sentiment. But where's the practicality on any level? Right? Now you go to Melbourne, the temple there, and they have a farm. They went out to local farmers. They found a farmer who understood what they wanted and they worked out a deal that they'll buy this much milk at this much price and he takes care of the cows. Does that make sense? Hence, they've been doing this for like 10 years. But it's one temple. Why isn't everybody else taking this? Why isn't this being talked about? It's not. It's just being the responsibility, the burden of it's just put on the community that they got to do it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Not. That's not real governance.
We try to order milk from another city, but by train it's often spoiled.
Yeah, but then you have to make the arrangements for the refrigerator car, this, that. It means investment has to be there. So if it's important, we understand it's important, you do it. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing, is that you find what's there, because you have to take a certain amount, it has to be regular. Are these city people going to be held down by being regular that every day they have to buy this much milk, you know, but I go out for this, I go out for that, sometimes I don't feel like milk, you know, this and that. They want to maintain their options. So, yeah, be begging, but shut up, you know. Just because you want your independent lifestyle and all that and no brains, go for it. Independent lifestyle and no brains. You know, it's fine, but why push it on everybody else? That's really, 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 really neophyte. Because you're doing this, you know. And this is the cause of so many problems. So much of the guru problems were there in the 80s because this is my guru, therefore he's important. Everybody should be connected to my guru. It causes so much problems. When it says this is your guru, and that Chaitanya Charitamrita, everybody has a guru. But you never hear about it. It's all about Lord Chaitanya. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. And then the last point, which is very practical, that you know people may not be able to go out and manage this and that, are they supporting gosadans? Gosadan means retirement for the cows. Because cows that are milking, they make money. But cows that are retired, they make no money. They only eat. Right? So that's a big burden on these things, because they'll keep the cows until this point and then they'll sell them. So then you have a gosadan that takes care of cows. So you buy, you know, huge, you know, thousands of acres that you just keep these cows at. In India, you have these ones, they have 100,000 cows, 200,000 cows at them. They're just gosadans. People give donations. It's simply run on charity. Right? So then you make a whole push that there's charity for gosadans. People can set them up. They can maintain themselves like that. You know, that they just go out and some devotees that like doing this kind of stuff, like taking care of the animals. Anybody with a background and also the, what do you call it, veterinarian, this and that, they can all move out somewhere huge acreage like that, and just the cows are out there. Build some shelters. They just spend all day eating grass. What's the expense? You know? You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is you have to give that. So then the goshalas can be viable. Do we hear any talk of that? No, we're talking about hospices and this and that for old people. What about the old cows? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Is then you have gosadans, then automatically that makes the goshala run much easier. Right? And then you're willing to pay the price it'll be to take into consideration how they deal with the cows, how they feed the cows and all those things, the space and all things. Because space costs money. Right? And so that kind of thing is necessary. So you have to invest money in charity and in investment in that. So you'll pay more for the milk and you'll give in charity the gosadans. And then hari bol, it works. That's the solution. That you're doing something. But that means you have to give up money. And who wants to give up money? Right? You have more important things to do, like buy a new pair of shoes or, you know, get a new haircut, you know. And we're not talking about the $5 haircuts. We're talking about those $80 haircuts. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that our value system is not as such. So we've only caught the vegan thing because people talk about it and harass us about it, and they're embarrassed to talk back about them, to them. Sorry? Yes, so that means people should be giving in charity. That's what, if we're talking about community-based kind of, you know, how you say society, that means, community means people who are making money. And people who make money should give in charity. You know what I'm saying? So that's how it works. But who's preaching? Who's organizing? Who's getting them? Who's talking about pure devotional service? Why do we do these? Why these five? Because we'll only do one. Now it's cows. You know? And in the background, before it was ladies. Before that, it was kids. Like that. And as I said 2 years ago, they tried the old people, but that didn't take off. And like I said, Brahmins, they'll never touch that.
More of them are getting old now, so it'll probably come back.
Yeah. But the problem is they're also dying off, so there's less of them to complain about it. You know, so, you know, and the young people, they don't notice, you know, until they get old.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
One devotee asked me a few days ago how to apply this principle in a personal life. If, for example, the devotee has some amount of money for charity, and what will be better, to donate it to maintenance of
whatever you like, or give some for each. The point is it doesn't. Things go a long way if people know how to do it. There's so many things there. So if they're organized nicely and all that, then these things work nice. Like what's his name in Vrindavan from Italy, Kurmarupa, and the other. Yeah, he was the cows, and then the other one for the kids.
Rupa Raghunath.
He has all these schools, thousands of Brajabasi kids going to school. He rents all this stuff and like that. And he just publishes, this is what it is, and he's not making any profit off of it.
Sponsoring the cows. All
yeah, all that. It just goes, because it's like that. But take UNICEF, which is something very popular. I think only 10% of the money that's given actually gets to the ground, because the administration is so big. You know, because there somebody just goes out and does it. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, someone goes out into the country, runs a ghost sedan, and that's there, then how much is it going to cost for making it? But if you have this big city kind of thing, which is how we like to do things, it's very expensive.
You know? Yes, Krishna will be pleased equally if you donate to devotee and if you donate to cows.
It's go brahmana hitaya cha, so it means the Vaishnavas and the cows. It's like this. It's they both there. So it's just you find what you want to do. It should just be aware that these are there. And so money goes to these things. You know, projects go into that. Devotees take it up as a project. They make the effort. you know, these kind of things. But yeah. So, you had something? The back? Yes.
I was going to ask, do you think there's a way, with all this energy of the vegans, is there a way, do you think you could fan a spark of bhakti within them?
It means the point is if they can be human, yes, but if they're just vegan is the only identity, then it's a little harder. Means that that vegan would mean that they're trying to be nonviolent. So that's a good quality. But the whole point is what's the point of the, it means why do you want to be nonviolent? You know, it's like that. Okay, so you're better human. So then what's human life for? You say better. So if we uplift ourselves, what's a human supposed to be doing? So then there's the spiritual and all this. So what I was discussing here, that's for devotee vegans. The outside vegans, you don't have to be so in your face. You know?
Do you think that comes from their own aversion to death?
Their own?
Their own aversion to death. So they...
No, not necessarily, because people can have an aversion for their own death, but don't mind everybody else's. You know, so that's not necessarily. The point is you're talking about good qualities, but then what's the purpose of good qualities? Where are you trying to get? What's the goal of all this? In other words, they're being vegan, what's the goal? If it's only health and all that, then okay, nice. You know, that's one aspect like that, but then somebody else will say it's exercise that's going to make you healthy. You know, another one's going to say it's by yoga, by being in a peaceful environment. Someone else is going to say, move out of the city into the country. That'll make you. So the point is what's the point of health? You know, what do you want to do with this health? Oh, live long. Why do you want to live? What are you doing with your life? So there has to be the element that what's the difference between human and the animals is that this higher consciousness. Otherwise, animals like to preserve life also. You know? Does it still make sense?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Also, Maharaj, one point is for the vegans, devotees are the easy target to please. For others, to change their everything is.
Yes, yes. Because the devotees is just somehow or another they've gotten into this and they're really sincerely thinking they're doing something. But if you look at it mechanically, nothing's being done. Because you can say, no, but I'm not drinking milk. Yes, you'll. Means by being a vegetarian, you're already reducing the meat industry. By not drinking milk, you just get rid of the dairy industry. And how is that helpful? Oh, but they're misleading like that. So is that the way to go? Okay, so then some parents don't deal properly with the kids. So therefore, why don't we ban being parents? No one can get married. No one should have children. Then we solve the problem, right? All these children not being taken care of. We just don't have children. It solves the problem. So that means no one gets married. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole thing, is that it's not a well thought out program. Because we have to remember, it starts with Krishna. It's Krishna's program. Cows and human society are Krishna's program. Not that it's suddenly, oh, the vegans care. Point is, if you're offering milk to the deities, the cow gets the spiritual benefit. Maybe not many material benefit, they get the spiritual benefit. But being a vegan, they get neither. So if, you know, the dairy farmer selling them to the meat industry, you know, whoopee, wow, I've done so much for that cow. And there's no spiritual benefit. Well, the other, at least then they're in the dairy farm. Right? It's not ideal. But the point is political solutions haven't solved anything. That should be very obvious. And it should be very obvious to the people pushing it. You know, if you were a hippie in the 60s, you should understand this. You know? It's just, since when has political solutions ever solved anything? Yes?
So it seems there's a misconception that we can actually make the material world a nice place.
That's exactly. That we're going to make this perfect place here, you know, heaven on earth, goodwill to men. Right? Yes. Made the Protestants more prominent. 86 got rid of the Jews, and then you move into then the Protestants step forward. You know, eternal damnation, you know, heaven on earth, goodwill to all men. Like this. These came up since then. Because the point is that doesn't mean we're rough or this or that. The point is you have to be intelligent. And to be intelligent, you need to drink milk. I always find it really, really interesting. Like vegetarians, it's just they make vegetarian stuff. Rice with vegetables, pasta with vegetables, you know, baked vegetables and, you know, stuff like that. Put some cheese in it, put some this and that, right? It's just vegetable stuff, right? But vegans, most of their menu is a copy of non-vegetarian stuff.
Yeah.
It's all mock, you know, meat substitute. So where's that going? You know, and when they stop being vegans, which more vegans stop being vegans than vegetarians. Vegetarians, generally people, most people stay. But a huge amount of vegans stop being vegans. And when they stop being a vegan, they don't become a vegetarian because they spent their whole vegan lifestyle fight against vegetarians as much as meat eaters. They go back to meat eating. So then, okay, now I became a vegan, they closed down all the dairies, they sent all the cows to the meat industry, and now when I give up being vegan, now there's plenty to eat, right? Eyeball, good strategy, yes.
Just a shock, they put onion in everything, vegans.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing, you cannot find anything which is without...
Because otherwise there's no taste. Because dairy gives flavor, you know, that...
Not only are they not developing the finer brain tissue,
they're also ruined. Yeah. I saw one vegetarian restaurant. It was Oriental. It may have been Chinese. It was showing the five kinds of onions. You know, regular onions, garlic. You have leeks, shallots, and spring onions. Right? And it was showing from Chinese medicine which one destroys which part of the body. You know, the intelligence and the lungs and this and that. And so they just, their whole thing was, there's a big board on the wall. Their just thing is just, you know, don't use these things.
It's like when you cut something and you start crying, generally that's the sign. You should, I mean, maybe just consider, maybe it's not good for me.
Could be.
Eyes start burning.
But then according to that logic, then that means that we shouldn't watch the afternoon soapies.
Mm. I think it goes for that as well. Yeah, I think it's transferred, actually.
Okay, no, I'm just joking. And that's what you call challa.
Yeah.
That's shifted. Yeah. Like,
it's a high quality.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so we're good?
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah? I know that I could get good news to all of us.
Okay. Yeah. But the point is talk to the most dairy farmers, they're not demons. They like cows. That's why they're doing dairy farming. So if you had such things to go sit on, then they would be happy to have their cows go there. Or they'd run them themselves. But then, you know, that means then they have to, like that, and take care of them nicer. If you're going to will pay more money, then they'll put it in. You find people who are, you know, straightforward enough that they'll respond. Like we said, Melbourne's been doing it like for 10 years. You know, so it is possible. You know, so it's just a matter. What other temples are doing it? I haven't heard of one. Okay, so then...
They were ordering milk for many, many years. One night farmer, and he was getting old and trying to close down. But because the devotees were still ordering, they're finding only temple now.
Okay.
They're not selling outside, just for the
temple. Temple, okay. So then, point is then that's two. You know, two down, what do you call it? 798 to go. And we're including the farms. Yeah. Means they also need to get the milk scene together. You know, because they say, yo, within 1 year to do this, great, nice, if they can do it. But they haven't been able to make goshalas viable, you know, in the last 40 years. So, because no one wants to put in the time and effort. It's like in Wada, they have their goshala there. Everybody there goes down and spends time with the cows. You know, so they have this cow consciousness. They do. They have a gosadan. They have the goshala. They split it like that. So it's just that's how Indians do it. So learn. We don't do that. You know? and you could do it. There's millions of cows that could have, you know, need to go to a Gosha dance. So, you know. And so it wouldn't be a problem. Like Australia has huge, you know, I mean, everybody's in the city, so out in the country you got huge. America, the whole Midwest is empty, right? You know. So it can be done. Okay. So, as we were discussing, so we understand that Krishna is there, then his expansion is as Balaram, right? And then that expansion is Balaram, then he's taking care of that whole aspect that has that understanding of the opulence and all that aspect there. Then you have you know, also expansion, but what would be in our context from the Panchatattva would be incarnation, where now you're dealing with those in the material world. And so then Mahavishnu and all that down to Kiradaksha, and then all the other incarnations come from Kiradaksha Vishnu. So that's why then Mahavishnu is the incarnation, because from him all others are coming. You know, and Balaram is the expansion of the Lord, of who all others are coming. In fact, the incarnation is also expanding from him. You know, expanding from his expansion. So these three features. The original Lord, who is not Narayan in this case, because in Braj no one sees him that way. So that way he's not Narayan. But at the same time, as we see, Brahma says he is. So that's why you see it can be looked at in both ways. Because he is ultimately Narayan, because he is expansion, but at the same time, his original two-armed, medium-sized form is not. He's the source of Narayan. Does that make sense? Because you're the source of something doesn't mean you are that. Is that good? Yeah? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.